91.5, WKSV Thompson 89.1, and WNRK Norwalk 90.7.
The time is 9 o'clock.
For decades, Strongsville has been pushing for a new I-71 exit at Boston Road, its southern border with Brunswick. The city says it would ease heavy traffic at the exit for Route 82 Royalton Road, Strongsville's busy commercial corridor. Brunswick's elected officials say they weren't consulted and they don't want the new interchange. Welcome to the Sound of Ideas. I'm Amy Eddings. Hear why Brunswick's vice mayor and council president Nick Hanick is against a Boston Road exit, and whether the state did an end run around regional and federal highway planning standards. Plus, a doubling of electricity rates that went into effect this month could lead to a June swoon when your bill arrives. We'll tell you how to shop for lower rates. First, the latest national and local news. It's the Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Amy Eddings. Thanks for joining me for my first time in the SOI host chair. You may be used to hearing me earlier on Morning Edition. Well, Andrew Meyer filled in for me today. I'll be back at that 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. spot on Wednesday. I'm so glad to be talking to the loyal audience of SOI's now retired host, Rick Jackson. He's sipping his coffee or tea and listening right along with you right now. Good morning, Rick. And again, thank you all for joining me. The start of June was also the start of new electricity rates across the state. In Northeast Ohio, First Energy's subsidiaries, the Illuminating Company and Ohio Edison, have doubled their price per kilowatt hour from about 6 cents to 12 cents. A customer who uses about 750 kilowatt hours each month who did not switch their energy supplier before now will see their bill go up from about $44 to $93. Wait, you're saying I could be paying lower prices? Yes. In Ohio's deregulated electricity market, you can choose who supplies your electricity, but it's confusing, and you need to pay attention to the fine print. Today, to kick off the Sound of Ideas, find out why your bill is rising and what you can do to save money. Later in the hour, hear from Brunswick's vice mayor about why he's worried about a proposed I-71 exit at Boston Road, the city's northern border with Strongsville. And finally, we hope to get to this segment, a behind-the-scenes look at NPR's Tiny Desk contest. Little Moon won the contest this year on its fourth attempt. But first, with me now to discuss the increases customers will be seeing on their electricity bills is Kathy Ann Kowalski. She's a freelance energy reporter. She's written for the Energy News Network and the Capital Journal, among other publications. Kathy, welcome back to the Sound of Ideas.
Glad to be here, Amy.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 866-578-0903, 866-578-0903, or email us at soi@ideastream.org. You can also tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Or one more way, text us at 216-916-6478. All right. Kathy, many people will experience sticker shock when they open their June electricity bills. I know we at IdeaStream and other media outlets were talking about the June 1st increase. Do you think, from your perspective, it was enough to break through the noise? Did customers see this coming?
I think enough customers were reading about it, but I think a number still are going to be surprised because, unfortunately, a lot of people don't pay attention to the news, but maybe this will get them to start thinking about energy.
Right. Well, one way of gauging whether customers made a mad rush to alternative energy suppliers is to look at the switch rate. 6,000 Ohio Edison, and Ohio Edison is the bigger player versus the Illuminating Company here in Northeast Ohio. 6,000 Ohio Edison residential customers out of a total of 720,000 made the switch from Ohio Edison to an alternative supplier between January of 2023 and April 2023. In the last month, I think April to May, the use of alternative suppliers rose by just 2%. To me, that says that there wasn't a lot of switching. A lot of people didn't switch. What does that say to you?
It may depend on the timing of the switches. Okay, so I'm in the Cleveland area, in one of the suburbs that's part of the NOPEC aggregation group. And, you know, one of the things that should be understood about this price hike is that it's largely a factor of timing and global energy markets. And so because of the way, you know, the war in Ukraine and worldwide gas prices had been rising steadily through 2021 and 2022, the natural gas prices, which tend to drive our electricity prices globally, were really, really high last fall. And at that point, you know, you had some aggregators such as NOPEC decide that they were just going to put all their customers back to First Energy or whomever because they were paying the market prices at that time, which had risen to about the levels that we're seeing First Energy have now. Well, at that point, First Energy was tied into their rates through the end of May, but they needed to do their auction last October to figure out what the rates would be starting June 1. And those auctions used to be done more frequently, but because of delays in PJM process, the grid operators process for determining which power plants are going to be standing by and so forth, that had been scrunched down. So what we're seeing now in the First Energy rates is a ripple from what was going on last fall. Now, since then, the global prices for natural gas have come down, as have a lot of the market prices for electricity. So NOPEC, for example, took a bunch of their customers back this spring. I think I was back on NOPEC for my bill as of May or something like that. So, you know, I think there's just the Ohio Edison switch rates may not accurately show everything going on behind the scenes.
And Kathy, we will get into talking about what NOPEC is, what an aggregator is versus folks who are not part of a community that belongs to an aggregator. I am not. I went online to a website that the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio operates called Apples to Apples Ohio that helps me to look at other rates, shop for lower rates. I want to get into more details about that in just a moment. We're already getting some calls. And again, okay, you can join the conversation by calling 866-578-0903. You can also email us at soi@ideastream.org. So Rennie wants to know if the guest knows any local companies that do, if you know of any local companies that do electricity audits for residents. Do we want to hear from Rennie? Rennie, you're on The Sound of Ideas. Good morning.
Morning. I have a very high electricity bill, and I haven't been able to find anybody who can do a residential audit. I'm wondering if your guest knows anybody who can.
Kathy, do you know any? Rennie, you're looking for a residential audit. What would that help you to decide? What are you looking for?
I'd like to find out what the individual usages of the different aspects of my electrical power are, so I can figure out why it's so high.
Got it.
I've tested all my outlets and all my appliances, and I can't figure out how I'm getting so much electricity use.
Got it. Kathy, any suggestions for Rennie?
Call Dominion. Dominion Energy, who supplies gas for a lot of us. Their website shows that they have a home energy audit that they offer. And even if they aren't, there's a fee for it, something like $50. but it's listed on their website at and the they give a number of 877-287-3416. That may be part of their general energy efficiency provisions that they offer to customers. But even if they've discontinued it, they could tell you which companies they have used in the past, and you could contact those companies directly then.
Thank you, Rennie, for calling in. Kathy, part of the confusion may be over the fact that electricity consumers are paying two separate fees, one for distribution and one for generation. Could you break that down for me?
Sure. When it comes to distribution, that's basically the wires that are getting the power into your house. So that's the delivery. Think of it as the postal carrier bringing the mail to you, right? Mm-hmm. But the postal carrier doesn't create all the mail, right? There's somebody else somewhere is making the electricity. Before 1999, that was almost always going to be a power plant owned by your electric company. But starting in 1999, Ohio said, you know what, we'd like to have competition. We'd like to let people choose who they want to get their electricity from. And the idea was that could bring electric prices down.
Got it. We've got an email here. Let me see if I can scroll up to find Jerry's email. Hold on a second. Oh, I'm having a difficult time getting to that call screen. Oh, okay, here we go. Jerry said last year we decided to switch to a renewable energy supplier. It was several cents per kilowatt hours cheaper. First Energy raised their fees and charges so much that Jerry's bill actually went up. Does that sound familiar to you, Kathy? Can you explain why that might have happened?
The utilities have tended to have charges that they place on someone not getting their, basically a charge to make sure that you are able to take their electricity if a renewable generator or some other generator fails. There has been some work on trying to adjust those charges because they are in many senses somewhat unfair. Arguably, with renewables, if it's connected to the grid, there should also be some net metering going on. So they may want to check further with their supplier to find out what's going on, is there net metering, and so forth.
So, Kathy, I said at the top of this segment that we were going to talk about ways that people can find a lower cost supplier.
Correct.
I went to the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio's website, energychoiceohio.gov. You can also Google it under Apples to Apples Ohio. I actually switched rates, it was a really cumbersome process. There's something like 40 plus different suppliers I could have chosen from. And I found that you really have to be careful. You have to read the fine print. The deal that I got that kept my rate at about 6 cents per kilowatt hour instead of 12 cents is only good for 6 months. I have to check back in 6 months to shop around again.
Correct. It's rather, pardon the pun, energy intensive on the part of the consumer to have to pay attention to all of that. But it is a rather worthwhile option. And, you know, as of 2 years ago, when the auctions for the power companies were more frequent, the standard service offer tended to be a pretty decent deal for consumers. And there had been an Ohio State paper out to that effect. The shopping on your own is possible. It's doable, as you've demonstrated, but you do have to pay attention. Government aggregators or aggregator services essentially do the shopping for you. And their argument is that they use bulk purchasing power to strike a better bargain on the customer's behalf because they're representing so many people. And aggregation, if your community offers it, has tended by and large to be a pretty decent option because you can sit back and pretty much not pay attention.
But that's only if your community, communities like Rocky River, Lakewood, Cleveland Heights, participate in NOPEC.
Right.
Cleveland City Council is holding a hearing today on whether to approve the city's request to join SOPEC, the Sustainable Ohio Public Energy Council. As you were describing, it's a nonprofit that buys electricity in bulk for municipalities.
Correct.
If council approves the request, when would Cleveland Public Power customers see relief?
The earliest would be August.
So in the meantime, they would pay the higher prices like everybody else?
In the meantime, they would pay the higher price.
Now, if I belong to a community, and I do, Fairview Park, that doesn't belong to NOPEC, can I petition my city government to get into NOPEC?
I believe Fairview Park is in NOPEC.
Okay. How do I find out for sure? I haven't received anything in the mail about that. How would I find out for sure that my community participates? Just call my city hall?
Call city hall.
Great. Let's get an email from Anne. Anne says, I was told I needed a smart meter to use some of the services and get their rates. What will happen to rates for Ohio Edison after June 30th? Why is their rate only for a month? I'm not sure I understand what Anne means by that, but this idea of a smart meter, can you answer that part of her question?
Smart meters are meters that can communicate with the utility directly without requiring a meter reader to come out. They also can track things like time of day usage. They're generally a good idea. First Energy has been going through the territory and trying to install as many of them as they can. If somebody's got a program where they need a smart meter, it may be for purposes of either net metering, or it may be for purposes of trying to get some kind of time of day use, where if you, you know, for example, run your dishwasher at night after everybody's gone to bed, you'd get a lower rate or something like that.
Got it. Right. Finding that's another way that you can reduce your electricity costs if you don't want it, just overall, even if you find a lower rate or you belong to NOPEC or get enrolled in SOPEC, it's just to run your dishwasher overnight, keep your air conditioner set at 75 degrees, things like that.
Right. I mean, the time of day factors depend on whether they offer a rate to do that. And, companies have been slow so far to offer those rates. But if they offer that, they're great. And, general energy efficiency ideas, taking advantage of opening the windows at night, shade, fans, it's a pain sometimes, but the idea is to try to reduce energy usage overall.
One last question, and this is from Scott. Scott from Oberlin, you're on the Sound of Ideas. Good morning.
Howdy, folks. I have been quite enjoying and have been informed by you folks here at NPR on energy issues for quite a few years. My question is with these rates, the rate raises that we're seeing, these are all because of the fuel, the natural gas, correct?
Largely.
And has the nuclear power from our two reactor complexes on Lake Erie, have those prices been stable? For those prices for the power generated from those facilities, because this was a big thing that was talked about for a few years because of House Bill 6 and some of the other prior bills that were trying to keep those reactors open because they were facing competition from very low gas prices.
Well, and the gas price, the natural gas prices worldwide, I believe I mentioned, have dropped back down. So they are now around they're now around the rate that they had been a year ago. So those rates did not stay high. The prices are in the wholesale market, and they tend to be driven mostly by the natural gas prices. And a company will sell their electricity, whether it's from natural gas, coal, renewable, wind, whatever, at whatever the market rate is. So people compete and bid, and whatever's the lowest price tends to win that bid. So far, it's been natural gas, but the levelized cost of energy for, say, new wind and solar tends to be cheaper than fossil fuels right now, according to the latest Lazard report that came out.
Scott from Oberlin, thank you for your call. And Scott, the call screener had mentioned that you were you actually had a thought about House Bill 6, that huge controversial energy bill that led to a $1 billion bailout of two failing nuclear power plants. That bailout was rolled back. Former Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder was convicted of taking bribes from First Energy to help get House Bill 6 passed and to make sure that no resolution got on the ballot to rescind House Bill 6's bailout provisions. Kathy, in the few minutes that we have left, I want to know about that these rate hikes coming up against this backdrop of the House Bill 6 scandal. First Energy admitted to bribing the former chair of the PUCO, Sam Randazzo, to use his position to get friendly rulings. He helped draft a decoupling provision in HB 6 that would have guaranteed profits for First Energy. He scrapped a rate review of First Energy. Now, he's never been accused of any wrongdoing in this. In light of this scandal, however, how can First Energy customers in particular know they're not being taken advantage of again with these rate hikes? How do we know that there are real choices in the Energy Choice program that the PUCO runs?
The PUCO is acting as a clearinghouse there, and so the contracts that anyone makes are with the vendors for the electricity portion. As far as whether one trusts First Energy, my best advice is to continue to read the news, pay attention to your bills, and ask a lot of questions, both of the people at the utility, the people at the PUCO, and the lawmakers down in Columbus.
And would we expect these rates to remain high into winter this year, or might we see prices drop, Kathy?
Yes, I forgot to mention that. The prices will vary, and so-called winter pricing will kick into effect in September, and that could be higher or lower, depending on the circumstances, but there are different prices that come into effect then, because at that point, the theory is that if you've got natural gas, it's competing with the heating market at that point. So there may be variations people see in the bills due to that. The overall results of the First Energy auction are in effect through May 2024, though. So it's a good idea for customers to do some shopping now and then to review that again come next May.
And Kathy, before we close, are there other resources that are out there that you can direct people towards? I know I talked about energychoice.ohio.gov. That's the apples-to-apples shopping site. Any other places
Correct.
Where people can find good information about their options in lowering their electricity bills?
The Office of the Ohio Consumers Council. And they also have very good resources to guide customers when they shop to try to avoid predatory practices that some companies might have. So they have some good consumer protection resources for people.
And say that name again, the Office of...
The Office of the Ohio Consumers Council. They are on Twitter at OCC4U.
And they're at occ.ohio.gov. Freelance energy reporter Kathy Ann Kowalski, thank you so very much for joining me. You've provided a lot of really great information for our listeners. I really appreciate you joining me this morning.
Sure. Glad to be here. Take care. Thank you, Amy.
You too. Time now to take a quick break. But on the other side, a planned highway interchange between Strongsville and Brunswick is causing a stir. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Amy Eddings. We'll be right back. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Amy Eddings. Thanks for being with us this hour. For decades, there's been talk of creating an I-71 exit at Boston Road. It's the east-west border between Strongsville and Brunswick and Cuyahoga County and Medina County. The proposal has never gone anywhere until now. Strongsville State Representative Republican Tom Patton is concerned about backups at the Route 82 exit and congestion along Route 82's crowded commercial corridor. He added a provision in the state's $13.5 billion transportation budget that requires an interchange to be built between Strongsville and Brunswick. Strongsville has since hired a consultant to solely study Boston Road. Brunswick's Vice Mayor and Council President Nicholas Hannock says Strongsville's trying to solve its traffic problems by pushing them off on his city. He joins me now. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Thank you, Amy. I'm glad to be here.
Also joining me is Grace Gallucci. She's Executive Director and CEO of the Northeast Ohio Area-Wide Coordinating Agency, or NOACA. Grace, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Amy.
And Grace, I understand that you set aside some other things to be on this show. I really appreciate you doing that. I think you add an important voice to this conversation. If you would like to join the conversation, call 866-578-0903, 866-578-0903. Email us at soi@ideastream.org. Tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas, or text us, 216-916-6478. Okay, Vice Mayor Hannock, I'll start with you. Representative Patton has, actually, Grace, this is for you. Representative Patton has said Strongsville has been looking to create another interchange south of Route 82 for 25 years because of population growth and economic development, like the South Park Mall, which really changed the area when it opened in 1996. Grace, your reaction to this budget item, putting this interchange there, were you surprised by this? I know it's been a part of the conversation. NOACA has been engaged in these conversations for a long time. Was this a surprise to you?
Well, while the issue of the Strongsville interchange is not a surprise. In fact, we have worked very collaboratively with a number of the agencies involved, such as ODOT, Federal Highway, Strongsville, Brunswick, Medina, Cuyahoga, for a number of years. In fact, most recently, we did a study for the I-71 corridor from about the Strongsville area all the way through to Medina City, and had all of those folks, including the legislative representatives, as part of that study. And we looked at seven alternatives, including a no build, a widening of the Howe Road, which is kind of causing some of the concerns. We looked at adding southbound auxiliary lanes, full interchange, of course, a partial interchange, and a number of other alternatives. So the issue is not new. It was not surprising to us that it has become a more visible issue for the folks in Strongsville. However, it was a little bit surprising to see it in legislation, yes, as that is not normally the process for us to be able to advance an interchange.
Vice Mayor Hannock, you were surprised.
Absolutely. This is a tremendous surprise to us. This is the biggest form of big government imposing that I think I've ever seen. This would be the equivalent of Michigan deciding to turn Cedar Point into a garbage dump and Ohio having no say about it. So there's been a lot of surprise to see, especially from conservatives against this, to see that conservatives that said they were against big government used an absolute arm of big government to impose upon another city without that kind of discussion, without the typical processes, without the typical communications and collaborations. But this is something that has not been seen before, and it was an absolute imposition in down in the state house in a revised code section created specifically in order to impose something onto the city of Brunswick. And what is troubling about it is that this is something that's going to perpetuate itself in Ohio. The formula is out there. So whatever suburban community thinks they're immune from having a neighboring community impose a highway interchange into a residential neighborhood in their community, if they're near a highway, the formula is out there and someone will take advantage of it.
I'm going to get to what that area at Boston Road is like in a minute, but I want to know, did your state representative, Republican Melanie Miller, know about this?
Melanie Miller is in support of what our efforts are to do this. I do not know, and I cannot speak for her as to the extent that she was aware of all the implications of what this might mean. And I can explain why. It doesn't say Brunswick. It doesn't say Strongsville. It doesn't say Boston Road. It says if you have two adjacent communities, one in a county with a population over a million, and both cities over specific populations and a specific mile marker, it doesn't read like what it does. It's just put in there to create an imposition of a project without saying it's imposing this project. So that's one of the reasons we were caught off guard as well, was because of the way this was to bring in a decision. Another community get to make a decision for my community without any say-so. It's shocking.
I invited Representative Patton to join us. He's dealing with a family issue, but he has agreed to talk to me soon for a fuller story on the Boston Road interchange. I also reached out to Strongsville Mayor Thomas Persiak. He's declining to comment until a feasibility study is done, which is underway now. And I reached out to Strongsville Council President Jim Carbone, who did not respond. Vice Mayor Hanek, lots of Brunswick residents use the Route 82 exit traveling north or south along Howe Road, which is what Grace Gallucci mentioned before. Howe Road is a north-south road that sort of runs parallel to I-71. It connects Route 82 to Boston Road. I grew up in Brunswick. My family lived in a subdivision off Boston Road, not too far from I-71, from 1971 until 2006. So again, big change between what I remember in the 70s. My family had to, whenever we wanted to go to Cleveland, we had to travel up Howe Road, a little two-lane road, to get to the Route 82 exit to head north on I-71. Have you considered the benefits of a Boston Road interchange for families like mine?
So there's a few things there. First off, right now, in the past few weeks, Howe Road is actually shut down for resurfacing. And the traffic backups being cited are still happening at Route 82, which should tell everybody that it's not, the issue is a traffic issue in Strongsville. The benefits of what this would mean, we're talking maybe a marginal convenience at best, are completely outweighed by the detrimental effects to hundreds and hundreds of families changing their lives through having a widening of a road, a freeway interchange in their front yard, people coming in and out of their community that weren't there before, thousands upon thousands of cars. And that's not just to mention the homes that are going to be lost. I get calls from Strongsville and Brunswick residents alike worried about what their future means to live in that area, the home that they invested and worked towards, where they thought they were going to retire, where they thought they're going to raise their children, as bus stops turn into, you know, a highway corridor. And it's a very shocking change. So the benefit would be that those people living there in that neighborhood are going to lose the value of their home. Mm. They're going to lose their quality of life, and they're going to be, so you might save a minute of time, and maybe that's only in the short term, because we know that as highway interchanges come in, ultimately things get busier again. The solution is created by the same, the solution being proposed is coming from who created the problem. And so I don't see any benefit to the families because it changes the whole way of life to anyone living up there.
We have a call from Morgan in Akron. Morgan, welcome to the Sound of Ideas.
Hi, thank you for the call. I also grew up in the area, Hinckley, kind of sandwiched halfway between where Medina is and Strongsville. And that was in the mid-70s up through the early 2000s. And I think, sadly, you know, we can blame the Highway Administration for wanting to do these strange things at new interchanges and widening interchanges. But I'm afraid that, you know, these communities have only themselves to blame because of the unchecked growth that they've allowed to come in. If you look at what Medina was back in the early 70s, it was a sleepy little town with a few restaurants, no big box stores at all. And for Strongsville, the South Park Mall was not even there when I was young and growing up. And it's just exploded in traffic volume. So Strongsville is just paying the price for being the unfortunate conduit through which all that traffic is coming through. And the communities, I think, share a lot of that blame.
Thank you so much for your call, Morgan. Vice Mayor Hanick, you had said that Strongsville brought this upon itself. How did it do that, and what could it be doing instead of building an interchange at Boston Road?
So I'm really thankful for that call because it does show a lot of differences both between the communities and what it means to be a suburban community and what it means on how you have to look going forward and what you need to do. So we really emphasize what is called smart, we call smart growth. And we know that we can't create these kind of giant cement spaces, these spaces where the traffic is uncontrollable. And we really work to incorporate walkability, incorporate things where cars are not necessarily have to be used. So Strongsville, without getting too far into the weeds, because I've got very interesting people that know the road structure, but it's not as interesting for people that don't. There are certainly, Strongsville had opportunities to put what's called a slip ramp onto Howe Road. They had the opportunity to put a roundabout onto Howe Road. They had the opportunity to even check another road, look at an interchange at Drake Road if they really want an interchange. They also can do traffic signalization work at 82, and they need to take the steps to change some of the entrances and exits on 82 to their businesses. And, you know, they cite that Howe Road is such a problem. There's a restaurant that they put that connects to Howe Road in the past few years. That's a conscious decision on behalf of Strongsville to do things like this. And it's unclear to me why this is okay, why they have not taken every step possible to mitigate the traffic problem within the city, to work on the flow of traffic prior to going to the largest imposition of big government that anyone has seen. And also the caller mentioned from Hinckley, this is a real concern for the townships because a Boston Road interchange will absolutely change Hinckley, Brunswick Hills, and Valley City from being any rural community or semblance of rural community to having a commercial corridor right there at their front doorstep. So it really is going to change Medina County's entire way of life, entire way people live, and it will create another problem just as is currently at 82. It doesn't solve the problem. It doubles the problem.
Grace, NOAACA has an anti-sprawl mission. Representative Patton told Cleveland.com, the sprawl is already here. He says now it's time to invest in safety. So I ask you, why fight against suburban sprawl? What's the messaging against people wanting to live in Strongsville, wanting to live in Brunswick?
So I don't think, in fact, I know our mission is not anti-sprawl. Our mission is really focused more on comprehensive planning and ensuring that the decisions for development are thought through fully, and specifically looking at the impacts of not only that development on the community that it's in, and not only even on the adjoining communities, but on the entire region itself. I'd like to point out that the vice mayor said earlier that this language in the legislation isn't specifically targeting Strongsville, Brunswick, Cuyahoga County, Medina County. It has very specific language in a way that puts a formula out there to determine where an interchange should be, regardless of development or sprawl. And that's where we find the major issue. You know, we testified to the House and to the Senate against the legislation, and specifically because we had concerns that the adjacent communities would be infringed upon, and the decision-making authority of local elected officials was being usurped. Metropolitan planning organizations like NOACA, we are a metropolitan planning organization, was established specifically by federal law to enable consensus building amongst communities and local elected officials in order to facilitate that regional approach to transportation planning and funding. And if you think about why, in the 1950s and the 1960s, with the Federal Highway Act that started building the interstate system across the United States, that was a partnership between the Federal Highway Administration and the state DOTs. At that time, local governments were not included in those decisions. And we see that in many cases, interstates went right through neighborhoods, communities, family farms that may or may not have been the best way had the local government officials been involved in those conversations. And so as a metropolitan planning organization, we look at this language as an attempt to overrule that consensus-based approach. And we still look to federal law to say, rather than prescribing a specific outcome based on those specific metrics, we'd like to look at the entire process as was intended. You know, Federal Highway has its own requirements for interchanges. ODOT has its requirements, and NOACA has a board-adopted interchange policy.
So do you think this process ran around this typical process of approving interchanges?
Well, it was our concern that this kind of language that is placed into legislation could allow that kind of circumventing of a process. That being said, I'm not ready to say that that's the case, because NOACA still has some authority to ensure that this is included in, meaning if there is an interchange proposal, that it is included as part of our public review process, part of our long-range plan, part of our TIP. So there are many points where this will still have to come to NOACA for discussion. It's in a unique situation where it's in federal law that we must do those things, but now state law is saying that that formula is a guiding factor for the development of interchanges. Clearly, we're going to have to reconcile the two. And fortunately, as I mentioned earlier, one of our main objectives and our main reason for existing is to bring a consensus-building approach for doing things like building interchanges.
So there might be opportunities for Brunswick to get its thoughts heard on this and its position on this heard, and chances, opportunities for this to be altered in some way. Is that what you're saying, Grace?
I'm saying that we are already listening to Brunswick. Brunswick residents, as well as their elected officials, have contacted us either through emails or speaking with us. And we we will look at the issue and continue to study it to look to see if there is a way for us to resolve the problems that are real. There are traffic problems to some point, as I think you mentioned that Tom Patton said, the development is there and the problems are there. And he's correct. At this point, we do have some congestion. We have safety issues, et cetera, and we're going to need to resolve them.
Grace,
we have been studying it. Yes.
Thank you for making that point. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We've got a lot of calls, and there are several people who are making that point. So Peggy in Strongsville lives in Ledgewood, which is a residential community near the area that we're talking about. Peggy, welcome to the Sound of Ideas.
Thank you. I love this show. But I do want to say I live in Ledgewood. We moved here 10 years ago from Florida. And in this 10-year time frame, we've seen a preponderance of traffic growth coming off of I-71. And 1,500 of us sat diligently in meeting after meeting with Persiak and the rest of the crew in Strongsville, protesting that they were building all these other restaurants and stuff right there where the Medical Mutual building was, because we were saying, why have you not done a traffic study, et cetera? They didn't. But we understood the reason they didn't was they had the same issue come up when they built Costco, and the city of Strongsville lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney fees, and they knew they couldn't win. That being said, we can't get out of our own homes to get onto 82 to go to the grocery store. We can't have an emergency vehicle come in through that direction a lot of periods of time. And unlike what the gentleman said earlier, it is not because of the very, very recent repair of Howell Road. This has been going on for the past year and a half. It's been insane. They've worked on those traffic lights to make them all streamlined as much as possible, but there's just too many people. And a lot of people from Cuyahoga County are moving into Brunswick because of the lower tax rates.
Peggy, thank you for that. And I think what Vice Mayor said was that the current construction on Howe Road, to your point, yes, the congestion along Route 82 has been there and continues to be there regardless of the new construction now on Howe Road. Stephanie from Ohio City, you're on the Sound of Ideas. Thank you for joining the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Brunswick, close to Howe Road. My whole family still lives there, so I go back a lot. As somebody who now lives in Ohio City and doesn't have a car, one thing that is obvious to me in this discussion is that a big cause of this is not just too many people, but really too many cars. When you look at how my experience growing up in Brunswick and just Strongsville and Brunswick in general, it's not friendly for public transport. It's not friendly for bikers. It's not friendly for walkers. Before we dive into adding a new ramp, anything like that, are there active investigations going on looking to see what we can do to make the reliance on cars less in these communities?
Stephanie, thank you for that. Grace, I'm going to throw that Stephanie's question to you. What about extending bus lines or increasing mass transit opportunities into Strongsville and Brunswick?
Alternate forms of transportation other than the single car occupant or single occupant car is something we continually work towards, and we do support both by planning efforts and through supporting or allocating funding towards those projects, those alternate forms of transportation. So we would encourage them to be looked at as part of the solution. Of course, the problem is that the density sometimes does not really support some of the solutions that we're talking about, meaning that it wouldn't be efficient from an operational perspective to put bus lines in certain areas, or you couldn't walk to certain areas because they're too far away, et cetera. That being said, we still must look at all of those alternative forms of transportation and study how we can make them work
and
how they can be part of the solution.
Thank you, Grace. Vice Mayor Hanek, I want to give you the last word. What have you learned from this process, and what are you going to do going forward?
I'm glad you asked that, and I don't want anyone to think that we are going to sit idly by. One of the things that I do believe, and I will make it very clear, that I think this Ohio Revised Code section, and it is the opinion that it is clearly against the law. Federal law requires approval of new interchanges prior to the imposition of a statute like this. So we will take any and all steps to enforce the law, and we will definitely make sure that it is held to the standards that it needs to be legal. We do not think this is a legal process with that. I also want to include the study that we're talking about. We know there's going to be a study released. I know Mayor Persiak from Strongsville has not, the city of Strongsville has not responded to our public records requests about the details and communications. But what we know about this study is that they've been talking to the Strongsville company doing the study. They're paying for the study, for the most part, the city of Strongsville. The result is going to say whatever the city of Strongsville wants it to say.
And we are
expecting that.
Vice Mayor Hanek, I have to leave it there. Grace Gallucci, Executive Director and CEO of NOAACA, thanks for the time today. And, of course, City of Brunswick Vice Mayor and Council President Nick Hanek, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To get the last word on today's topic, send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're on Twitter @SoundOfIdeas. You can follow me @AEddings. The conversation continues there. If you missed any portion of this program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can also hear a rebroadcast tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I'm Amy Eddings. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.